Hello, everyone, and welcome to Culturally Relevant, a podcast about film, television, art, and culture. I'm David Chen, and today is another diary episode. It's Thursday, January 21st. It is the day after the inauguration of Joseph R. Biden Jr. And I wanted to make this an episode to talk about our feelings about the inauguration, our feelings after the inauguration, because honestly, I didn't know what was going to happen. And, you know, there's a lot of potentially bad things that could have happened, pretty much none of which happened. So that's great. And so this episode is just going to be reflecting on our thoughts and feelings in the aftermath of what has been a very intense and unusual and unfortunate 4 years of our lives. You can find more episodes of this podcast at culturallyrelevantshow.com. Email me at culturallyrelevantshow@gmail.com. Follow this podcast on Twitter at CrevShow. That's CrevShow. And if you want to support this podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/DaveChen. Joining me today is my partner in crime slash life, Joy of Napping. Joy, how are you doing today?
Well, first of all, happy actual New Year. I think this is the first day that feels like we might have actually turned a corner. And I've heard a few people sort of refer to it as like, well, this is the real January 1. I'm feeling very tentative today. Like I kind of don't know how to feel, and I'm glad we're able to have this time together to unpack that a little bit.
Yeah, so let's talk about the experience of the inauguration. I mean, let me describe to you the experience of being in this house over the course of the last couple of days, which is Joy has a flexible schedule, let's just say, with her job, and I do not as much. And so I think the day before the inauguration, Tuesday night, when we recorded like some Patreon bonus audio, you could not go to sleep. I don't think you slept until like 5 a.m. that night. You were like a kid waiting for Santa Claus to come in the middle of the night.
Right? And also for the Antichrist to strike. You know, it was like one or the other, yeah, or both. I think I actually slept at 2 and woke up at 5. And then I went back to sleep, not realizing the schedule of events for the inauguration is a bit loose, to put it mildly. Like, the oath of office is supposed to be at noon, I thought. So I thought, oh, I have until 9 Pacific. So when I woke up blearily at like 8:20 a.m. Pacific, I was like, oh my gosh, they're like assembled. Like, I need to run to a television right now. And as Dave knows, I am not my best in the morning, to put it mildly.
You're not a morning person. You're not a morning person.
I gotta ease slowly into the day. And so it was a pretty like just delirious experience yesterday, because the sleep deprivation and then kind of never knowing when was something going to be on television, despite having looked at all the schedules and thought I had planned. Yeah, that was tough. And I actually had a couple of work calls scattered in there too. So,
but I think we all had this mix of apprehension, fear, and really excitement, you know, because we were hoping that it was going to go smoothly. And it's this weird thing where it's like, this is either going to be one of the best days of the, you know, the last 5-10 years, or it's going to be one of the worst, right? Like, because we had just seen the desecration of the Capitol a couple of weeks ago, it felt like the range of possibilities of what could happen was very, very high. And I will say, like, the entire time, you know, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden were together in one location and outside, I'm just like, please go inside, please go inside. Like, I just didn't, they must be protected. You know, I didn't want anything terrible to happen to them. But apparently they had all that stuff locked down real nice and good. So I want to ask you, you know, as you remember the whirlwind of events that we watched unfold on TV, what were some highlights for you? What are some things you take away, some things you remember about it?
Well, for me, the inauguration started actually the day before. They had a few run-up events that I missed. I think there was like a virtual concert or something like that on Sunday. But on Tuesday night, there was this brief but lovely service over by the reflecting pool between the Lincoln Memorial and the Washington Monument. to honor and just remember the 400,000 people we've lost so far to COVID. And I think also just to create a collective space for grief, because a lot of us have also lost people not to COVID and been unable to get together and comfort each other and, you know, heal. Grieving is a process, obviously, but it's also one where I think sharing memories, doing little acts of service for each other, bringing somebody a plate of food, being able to have a hug, you know, all that stuff that you normally do when you grieve, like we've had none of that due to COVID. And so it really felt important to have sort of a specific time to remember those we've lost and to sort of just create space to grieve for everything we have suffered as a country. All those connections we're not able to have right now. So that was Tuesday night. And I think that is actually what kicked off this ultra intense spurt of feelings for me of lots of understandable anxiety, like you said, anticipation and excitement, soon to be relief, you know, feeling like you're in the final steps of a marathon. But also like kind of the creating of space for the pent up grief that we had. It's just been a lot. And it continued to feel like a lot, honestly, up until, why was I up at 5 a.m.? Because I really wanted to make sure that Trump made it onto that plane to go to Florida. And then I was like, he's probably not going to do anything from the plane, but he's still technically president. You know, so I was kind of like in stages releasing my breath.
Yeah. Is he going to like launch some nuclear attack in the last, you know, hours of his presidency or something?
Yeah,
ridiculous.
On the Capitol, you know, because he thinks he's in charge still.
Yeah, but none of that happened. The worst did not occur, at least not yesterday. And
that we know of. These are the kinds of caveats I have to like constantly remind myself of.
And that's great. So anything else about the day? There were obviously a lot of events.
I've watched most of the inaugurations. I'm a pretty like politically active person and like really engaged in the news. I think it was a pretty tight ceremony, but despite the awkwardness of not being able to have lots of people organically fill the National Mall, like, you know, normally for an inauguration, you don't really have to do anything other than show up. It's hard to get into like the special events, like the balls or whatever, but any human can just citizen. You don't even have to be a citizen, can just go. And obviously in contrast, this was very, very contained. And yet it still had very similar optics in the tight shots, at least. I thought it was going to look quite different and that we'd see like security perimeter. But I think they did a good job of disguising that to the extent that you want to disguise it and make it look like the city isn't occupied by federal troops.
But one of the greatest parts of the whole day is, first of all, a lot of amazing coats. People were very stylish and cleaned up.
Yes.
But also, everyone was wearing masks, which is just such a stark contrast to all of these Trump super spreader events. And also, even outside, people were socially distanced, like on the dais area and everything like that. And it just shows a respect for science and for each other and for health and for the well-being of one's fellow person that has been sorely missing. Like even just those subtle actions, if they didn't call attention to it, they're not like, hey, this morning we're all socially distant, you know, like as far as I can remember. Just looking at them all spread out all over the stage, it just is so striking visually how different it is and how we are going to start returning to our respect for science that we had. And it's really, it's amazing to see. It's a nonstop barrage of hope, of which that was the opening salvo.
Yes, I agree. And obviously, you know, the performances I enjoyed, having Gaga sing the national anthem in the way that she did, which was very interpreted pointedly to be about the Capitol terror attack.
Because when she's like, our flag was still there.
And she pointed right at it. And yeah, I mean, it was extra resonant. Everyone myself included, was just glued to their seats by this poem that it was a poem, and yet it was also, it felt like a really happened to rhyme oratory, you know, moment for Amanda Gorman, the very young poet. I think she goes to this school in Boston that you went to. So good luck, good job, you know, producing another. I'll give you that one. Mm.
The same university that Ted Cruz comes from, right?
And Kaylee McEnany.
Yeah, Ted Cruz and Kaylee McEnany.
They got to get a few right every now and then. That was a highlight. I thought all of it was incredibly competent and felt genuinely both somber and celebratory. And it is hard to hit that tone. I just remember real darkness, you know, discussion of like carnage and stuff like that at the last inauguration. And I did not know this until recently, like yesterday, but apparently after Donald Trump's inaugural address, George W. Bush turned to someone and said, "That was some weird shit that we just heard." Mm-hmm. And it was weird shit. It was like very dystopian. And so it was really lovely to see somebody who, a whole ceremony, and I would say this actually about all the day's events, that managed to artfully balance the fact that we are a nation racked with grief, devastated by economic worry, don't have a clear plan out of it, reeling from the aggressive sort of racism and sexism and anti-immigrant rhetoric and anti-immigrant actions of the last 4 years, you know, all the just trauma we have been through and are going through, and was also like acknowledging and trying to give hope that like this is potentially part, it is a step. It's not trying to minimize all of that and say, oh, we just go forward from here, which would feel really not only superficial and disingenuous, but also like part of the cycle of the problem where we don't acknowledge who we are.
Yeah. Did you have a chance to watch Biden's address? And if so, any thoughts on that?
Okay, real talk. I could barely focus. I was deliriously tired, so that's part of it. But like, I really didn't find it terribly compelling. And yet there were other parts, like most other parts of the ceremony, that I found really moving. And so I am told by many other people that it was great. And that has made me want to go back and potentially rewatch it. Have you seen it? What did you think?
Yeah, I've seen it. And it's like,
you had a work meeting during it. So
yeah, I had to watch it afterwards. But I think it's, you know, I personally found it to be overall like pretty anodyne, you know, like
okay.
In the sense that there wasn't anything specific. It, you know, I was listening to the Daily's coverage of it and they described it more as a sermon. Like it's very like, hey, here are some thoughts and feelings, some thoughts to think and some feelings to feel. But it's not really about like, here are the things, here are the like specific problems I'm going to help us solve. You know, it's not really about that. It's about mostly about unity, a word that he used, you know, dozens of times during the course of the speech. And there's a lot of questions about, like, what does he mean by unity? How is he going to achieve unity? Like, is unity going to have accountability as part of the unity? You know, like, there's a lot of questions about it. But the thing about Joe Biden that has been true, I think, for his entire campaign is that, like, when you play video games, right?
Wow, I want to know where this is headed.
This is going to be good.
Hard left.
When you play video games like Half-Life or Halo, you know, these are some of the biggest video games of all time. The protagonist often has either no voice at all, like you never hear them speak. Grand Theft Auto 3, another example. You never hear them speak.
By protagonist, do you mean like the character you are inhabiting?
You play.
I see.
To the point where it's kind of become like a joke, like, oh, like they make jokes about the fact that like you, the character, never talk. Or in the case of a game like Halo, which is a very popular game, the person has like almost no personality. And the function of that is that you as the player can like read in, you can project whatever your thoughts are. Like, that person is me. That is an avatar for me and how I feel and how I would act in this situation. And I kind of was reminded of
that. That is so strange, because then you like drive your car over people and shoot shit, right? Like, yeah. I don't know exactly what those games are. That's actually really disturbing.
A lot of times you're defeating aliens, okay? Like in the case of Halo, you're defeating aliens. So
are they humanoid? I bet they are.
A little bit, yeah. Anyway, so the point I was making is that it was interesting to see like Joe Biden's Twitter stream compared to like Donald Trump's Twitter stream in the course of the last couple months, right? Joe Biden's Twitter stream is Donald Trump is like QAnon this, and like the election was stolen that, and like these people are, you know, stop the steal and blah, 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 like all these like horrifying things. January 6th, shit's going to be lit. You know, like he's just tweeting all this. He's tweeting through it, tweeting through his loss of the election. And on the other side, you have Joe Biden, who is just tweeting the most inoffensive, like...
Joe Biden is not tweeting at all. A Joe Biden staffer is tweeting that, right?
It's just the most inoffensive, like, you know, America, you know, needs to come together during difficult times. It's just the most, like, inoffensive, like, it's saying almost nothing, just kind of like... America is awesome, and like we must be inspired by the example of those who came before. It's just like all this like boring stuff, and that is exactly what we needed. Do you know, like that is exactly what America was looking for at this point in time, is somebody who is going to be the inoffensive person, who is going to be the person that's like not necessarily going to say stuff that's going to ruffle feathers. And when I say need, I don't mean like that's the solution to all of our problems. I mean, this is the way that the election was won, right? Because like the people who had stronger opinions, who voiced them very vociferously, did not win the Democratic primary, right?
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying.
We needed this kind of broad-based, appealing person who is like, and a lot of people have compared him to like your old like grandpa, and I think basically the reason I'm going through that whole journey just now is to say like I thought that the speech was kind of an extension of that. It's just kind of like America, you know, like we haven't lived up to our ideals and we can again, you know, like
we
got to come together and yeah.
That Chris Wallace from Fox News,
he said it was one of the best he'd ever heard, right?
He thought it was the best he had heard since Kennedy. And so I was like, well, I guess a lot of these things are actually pretty not great. So that's the first thing. Secondly,
really, better than the Obama ones, you know, like,
right. I don't get it. But there were two things that he talked about. One is like, we have to end this uncivil war, which I thought was a pretty solid turn of phrase. And then the second thing is that, we are outright going to, combat lies and the scourge of white supremacy. And for a white man who was born in World War II, I think that's how old he is. I mean, it's that era, to acknowledge that we have white supremacy, you know, and he's white and therefore he benefits from the power structure that gives relative advantage to white people. He's been in the Senate forever. The Senate is itself in its structure, you know, I would say creates like racial disadvantage. And it may sound like a separate issue, the fact of misinformation, it's kind of a weird sentence to make, but the idea that misinformation is so important as an additional virus, essentially, that we're fighting at the same time. I don't think that actually is distinct from white supremacy, because part of white supremacy and racism's ability to continue to replicate itself is to distract people from what power arrangement is maintained by the current system. And one of the ways to do that is to make you terribly, terribly, terribly upset about the threat of socialism, or to tell you that they're going to take away all your guns, when like nothing like that. It seems even remotely. I frankly will go on record as saying I would love for there to be a huge gun buyback program in America and for us to melt these things down and throw away the remnants, you know, but like that's not going to happen. And I'm not sure that people are asking for a lot more than like background checks for additional guns, you know? So it's so unrealistic, some of these boogeymen, but the lies and the misinformation are tremendously helpful to keeping you from noticing that you still don't have healthcare or, you know, that that's a problem.
Yeah. So I think you're calling out some notable elements of the speech, which is that even though I'm saying it is pretty, you know.
Yeah, okay, I think it was. Yeah, I agree
there
with
are
you.
There are some notable components to it. I agree. Calling out white supremacy, did not see that coming, you know. And
I think Joe Biden has been on a journey to even be able to see the white supremacy and then to be able to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it was a speech that went in the right direction, but was extremely light on specifics, I would say, right?
An inaugural address is not a policy speech, and I think that's fine, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, I agree, like, I'm not expecting policy, but just, like, even, like, lies, like, whose lies? Who's even talking about in that case, you know, like...
Well, he did not mention his predecessor by name.
That's what I mean, is, like, it's very, very light on specifics, not even, like... Like, light to the extent that it's like, where are we even aiming the laser beam of, like, badness towards, you know? Like, anyway.
The thing is, there were two things he did that I thought were very, like, really set a remarkable tone yesterday. The first is that the Bidens were supposed to go to mass in the morning. And Trump was supposed to, I think, have his, like, rally and... at the Air Force base and then get on Air Force One and leave town. And normally this like sequence just does not occur in this way at all. But the Bidens waited. So they like stood and waited for Trump to have his final like walk off the camera before they stepped out of their door because they didn't want to step on his moment, basically. They wanted to let him like have it, and then they, you know, went to church. And I thought that is I would not have the grace to care for someone who has shown absolutely no respect, not only for the facts, but for the country. And literally other people have died for this person and he couldn't give less of a shit. You know, ex-President Trump hasn't called like the family of the Capitol police officer who died. Pence did, but Trump never even called, if you can believe that. And the other thing is that, you know, it has been reported that Trump actually did leave a note, which is one of the only courtesies that typically, you know, happens in the transition. And Biden refuses to discuss what's in it. And he said it's, you know, gracious and very generous and it's private. And he did not need to describe it as gracious and he did not need to describe it as generous. And who knows what is in it and whether it, and I don't even really care at this point. But these were two things where, and then in his in her first press conference as the White House press secretary, Jen Psaki also, you know, described it similarly, and then sort of tried to deflect all the interest in it, you know. And I was like, these are people who are like, this is statesmanship, you know. They know when to deploy feelings, and you know, like they know not to become the story. And this is what I'm looking for, is like self-discipline.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think for me, my reaction to you telling those stories is just like, these are just like decent human beings. You know, the Bible teaches us, by the way, that like, it's very easy to be nice to people who are nice to you. Much harder to be nicer to people who are not nice to you.
Absolutely.
And I'm glad that the Bidens are like practicing what they preach there. There's a story that was like on Twitter the other night about like Joe Biden attending the funeral of someone in Delaware. And it was like a very beloved community figure. And he showed up unannounced and there was like 100 people in line. And the Bidens, everyone was like waving them through. Come on, just go to the front of the line. They could have easily gone to the front of the line, and he refused to go to the front of the line. This was not like a well-covered event. Like,
I think there's like thousands of these stories of like his fundamental decency.
And it's just about like, it's about what you're doing when people aren't watching, right? He's not going to be perfect. He's going to make some fuck-ups that we're going to be really unhappy with. But like, you know, he fundamentally seems like a decent human being who's trying. Which, by the way, is something that I think we saw almost immediately. Like, he signed like over a dozen executive orders first day in office. He's like, gotta get to work. We're back in the Paris, Climate Agreement. We're back in the WHO.
Thank God.
It's just like, wow. Like, it's great that some of this stuff can be the Muslim ban is over with. It's just like, wow. It was kind of like because they're being reversed, it's kind of like revisiting like Trump's greatest hits. You're kind of like, oh yeah, I'd forgotten that horrible atrocity that Trump did happened, and now finally people who have lived under the cloud of this ban like can actually sigh relief now. And it's just like, what a profound difference even literally the last 24 hours has made.
I want to highlight a few things. I have not read all 17 executive orders that were signed on Wednesday, nor the 10 that were signed today. So I am sure I'm missing some. There are things that he did that were like an undo, you know, like, so the Paris agreement, you know, we had were part of and then dropped out of. And so now we're back in. The WHO, we had announced our intent to withdraw from in 2021, and now it basically is like, we're not going to withdraw. So fortunately, we never actually did withdraw from the WHO.
There's some lead time on that one that we got, yeah.
There were quite a lot related to COVID and basically using more of like the Defense Production Act and other things we have at our disposal to try to accelerate not just the vaccine deployment, but also like testing and, asking for a national mask mandate basically for his first 100 days, which I think is a clever bit of positioning, because 100 days is very finite. And, you know, for those people that are very worried about forever overreach, like it does make it anyway. I don't know how much we're really playing to them. But there were some other things that I was more surprised by. One of which was a halt to all deportations and a review, like a bunch of stuff like is we're not sure what we're going to do about that yet, but for now we're going to, like, the CDC has extended the eviction moratorium, which I don't honestly know how like well enforced that is in the first place. And then there's like student loans, not all of them, but federal student loans are both your payments are, you don't have to make the payment right now, and like the interest rate goes to 0% in this time. And so I did not fully expect that we would get, for instance, the deportation moratorium. Like that is... that is really moving to me because I've worked in immigration, and when you are not documented, or quite frankly, even if you have anything short of U.S. citizenship, even if you have a green card, you just always feel like the people who are enforcing these laws, like, they don't care. You know, they don't care about enforcing it in great detail, with great accuracy. If you get picked up because your name is similar to somebody else's name, like, you know, it just always feels so fragile, like your ability to be in this country. And the less heavily documented you are, so green card is like one step away from citizenship, but you could have like a visa that has a path to a green card as the step below that, and the step below that is a more temporary visa that you don't, etc. You know, there's like a whole sort of hierarchy of status. But sometimes you just feel like hunted in this country, and it's just a matter of time, you know, that you just live in like fear, and to the point that you will avoid interacting with services that you pay for and deserve. And in fact, like many cities that are sometimes termed sanctuary cities will offer services and not ask even like very basic identifying questions, not because they don't want to know, but because they don't want you to fear that they will somehow give that data to deportation authorities. And so even still, there's like a chilling effect across such a wide swath of our society. And I just on a moral level cannot understand what we think the benefit is of this, of people living in this way. And so I'm just really, I don't know what the immigration outcomes will be because, you know, Biden has announced an immigration plan, but it's just a proposal. It hasn't gone through either House of Congress. And we'll see. It's a tough, tough one to get past. But I also am just really grateful that someone is being merciful and giving these people a break. And even if you know, okay, the deportation pause is for X amount of time, like that's a period of time you can actually like plan a little bit and live your life and not live in such sort of day-to-day, hour-to-hour fear.
I'll link in the show notes to New York Times summary of all the executive orders. By the way, I want to clarify, it's not a national mask mandate. He is requiring social distancing and wearing of masks on all federal property by all federal employees, and also starting a 100 days masking challenge. So it's kind of a... Because apparently...
Well, and I think there's also a piece about interstate travel, right, that is maybe more of a mandate because that's, I think, covered by...
Yeah, I'll link to the show notes agencies. And people can read up on it as well. And I think also I want to say the banning of transgender people in the military was also like rescinded as well.
Yes.
And which brings me to another point, which is that in the days before he left office, Trump published this thing called the 1776 report, which is a very dickish attempt to rebut the 1619 project from the New York Times. Apparently, it was rife with historical errors and seemed like no effort was put into the creation of this thing. And literally day one of Joe Biden's administration, that thing is just gone from the internet. And one of my former managers at Microsoft, Casey Lemson, tweeted about how, like, from a technology standpoint, the Biden administration really had its shit together. Like, 1776 report completely gone. Like, everything seemed to transition over okay. And apparently, like, when you're filling out forms on the website, like, now they actually ask for your pronoun and you can, like, set a wide variety of pronouns now. And overall, the feeling you just got between the inauguration and the website and everything is just competence. Not necessarily like this is extraordinary, amazing. It's just competence, which is something we've been missing for a really long time.
Yes, yes. I will add, sometimes things that seem really simple actually take a lot of work, as you know. And so I don't want to denigrate competence by saying like it was just competence. And I think a lot of the people who have worked on the transition have done it under really difficult circumstances. For instance, until you know, money was released, people were like taking jobs without necessarily being paid, with just the faith that they would get paid in the future. Or, you know, a whole bunch of people, you know, their processing is backed up.
And the previous administration is not cooperating at all, you know?
Yes. And I'm sure they're discovering as they kind of take over these offices, like a lot of hopefully not literal bodies buried. But, you know, I think there is not only negative, I don't want to use that word. Not only are there like policies that were implemented in ways that were not in keeping with the ideas of the current administration. In many cases, I think things were simply not done. And therefore, it's like data is missing or it's kept in such a slapshod way that you might as well have to start over again. And they're only going to now be discovering what that even looks like.
Yeah. So we are now like a little over 24 hours into the Biden administration and a couple notable things that happened today. First of all, like Dr. Fauci, you know, he's been given an elevated role again, and he announced that we're back in the WHO. He made an appearance at the White House briefing, and it's just like, this here's, I've worked in corporations for a lot of my working life, and if you've never worked in a large corporation before, there are these things called reorgs, right? Which basically is like, hey, you know, we don't like how things are going, so we're just going to like switch up a bunch of like people's managers and put one team under another team and so on. And I've definitely been in the situation where like so-and-so like hated their boss, but it's just like, just wait for the reorg, just wait for the reorg. And then they get reorged and everything is fine at that point. And that's kind of what I was reminded of when Fauci is like, he just looks like he's a whole different person today. Like he's smiling and he's like, you know, the science, like I'm going to be making more appearances. The role of science is centrality has been, you know, re-elevated in this administration. It's just like, oh my gosh, it's amazing.
You know, we're talking about competence. We're talking about, competence under duress and difficult circumstances. But like, do you remember when we were promised by President Trump that they would have the best people, the most amazing people? They did not have the best people. They had people who would barely be qualified to be entry-level associates in like the companies that I've worked in. And so I am truly stunned that I think we actually do have an array of the actual best people. And look, not every appointee is politically aligned with me, but I do not doubt their fundamental effectiveness, that they are actual leaders, that they have credentials and relationships, and that they kind of just know what they're doing. And the outcome of having the best team is not that you end, or the best people is not that you end up thinking about those people, but that it is okay to not think about those people.
If you're doing your job well, people won't even think about you at all. You know, that is the promise of a good government. But Biden gave a speech today, and
wait, he did?
He gave a little briefing
today. Oh, yeah, that's right. And well, so we've been talking a little bit about the inauguration event itself, yeah, and then sort of what yesterday felt like. I'd love to switch to what today felt like.
Yeah, that's what I was already, already onto it. So
you got there same time as me, maybe slightly ahead.
That joy of napping is only registering every third word that I'm saying, just FYI. She is operating on extremely little sleep and a lot of energy. I mean, and I'll get to that. I'm going to return to that point. But Joe Biden gave a speech. It was broadcast live on Twitter today, and it was basically, and I'm sure many other places. And he talked about the pandemic, and he said he's going to try to vaccinate 100 million people in the first 100 days. Bold goal. And he said the next few months will be very, very difficult. We're probably going to reach 500,000 people dead. And he also said, like, hey, you know, help is on the way, but it's going to take months. And in the meantime, it will be very, very hard, probably harder even than it's already been. And so everyone should wear a mask. And it just felt so good to have a president who talks like an adult and treats us like adults, who doesn't reject the facts. And I'm sure he will reject facts at some point, or he'll try to deceive at some point, but like for today, he's like, he's leveling with us. He doesn't see it as a sign of weakness to wear a mask. He doesn't see it as a sign of weakness if you get sick.
He doesn't see it as a sign of weakness to tell us the truth.
Yes.
And of course, it's a little bit easier because you can like blame it all on the predecessor. But in this case, I really feel like he said a couple things that, you know, despite my pessimism and awareness of the news and, you know, everything else, it was hard to hear. I did overhear part of this speech. I now realize you were playing part of it earlier today. And he said, we had a memorial service last night, and it is not going to be our last memorial service like that.
Yeah.
And we may have many more. And he also said, and I knew that to be true, right? I know that, but it was still hard to hear. And then another thing he said was, there are 400,000 people dead and there are businesses that have closed forever. And I know that to be true as well, but like, that's also really hard to hear. But it's like important for me to like know that in my bones and not just have it be this kind of like thing I shove aside so that I can't face it.
Right. Or not have somebody who's the leader of our country trying to gaslight you into thinking those things aren't true. Right. Just the fact that he's acknowledging. And by the way, it's like there is some political risk to it. There is some political risk to like leveling with people. There's a reason why people often don't do it.
And I would say like what was surprised, therefore, you know, I thought to follow on the theme of the executive orders, it wasn't just that he was no longer gaslighting us. He was also telling me new things or things in a way that I needed to reckon with in a new way. And that is important because I don't want to just feel like I'm fighting the Trump era. I have lots of real problems that existed independent of Trump. And so I need to like have help in that. I want the power of the presidency in helping with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just nice to have somebody who's leveling with us, who is just being real. And I think something that I've wondered is like, you and I have quote unquote figured out what our pandemic plan is, right? Like we
say more.
Well, we have a series. I mean, I'm just saying like we have a series of protocols we follow, right? We have a whole set of like masks downstairs, right in the vestibule inside of our front door. And like, it's like whenever you're going out, we actually double mask now because apparently the science shows that double masking is helpful. I'll link to that in the show notes. So we have a whole procedure of like, hey, whenever we leave the house, we mask, and you know, often I will wear gloves as well, you know, and
the main thing is we mostly just don't leave the house.
Yeah, we mostly just don't leave the house. But we were able to like come to this conclusion by like reading on things and like figuring things out ourselves. But there are people in this country, I think, who when they see the president say it, it will impact them. Like they don't spend as much time reading as we do, or because they're busy, because they have lives, you know, like because they're dealing with more problems than we are. And I think that just hearing him say it, hearing him say like, wear a mask, it's a totally reasonable thing to do. It's going to save lives. Like hearing the president say that, hearing that him say, you know, vaccines are going to help, like just basic things. It's not going to impact, you know, all of the 70 plus million people that voted for Trump, but it's going to impact some of them, I think, and lives will be saved because of it. Like lives were lost needlessly, even over the course of the last couple months. I was listening to this Fresh Air interview with Maggie Haberman, who's one of the foremost Trumpologists in the country.
I have a whole train of thought about Maggie Haberman, so I'm glad you brought her up.
Yeah. And she's basically like one of the people whose reporting on Trump has been most illuminating about what is happening inside the Trump White House. And there, Terry Gross asked a question like, do you think Trump even likes being president? And her answer is basically like, he likes the accoutrement of being president. He likes Air Force One, the throngs of adoring fans, like living in the White House, you know, all that stuff. But he doesn't like doing anything about the job, you know, like he doesn't like leading or doing any of the work.
And, or learning.
Yeah. And it just struck me like, even just the last couple months, like the months since the election ended, just the senselessly tragic loss of life that has occurred, you know? We're currently at over 400,000 dead, and like a significant portion of that happened is since the election. And it's just like, if Biden had taken office sooner, or if Trump had just been okay with, you know, any number of things that happened, it's like thousands of people are dead today, and it didn't need to happen, and it was completely needless. And the reason it happened is because of because of this one man, but B, probably just as importantly, if not more importantly, the cowardice of the people that enabled him. And it's just, when you see the, again, competence juxtaposed with everything that has come before, just the full weight of the tragedy hit me.
Hmm. So you felt sad?
Yeah, just like oh wow, like these, it's just a thing where like these basic things can help save lives and they weren't done. Like yeah. It's not even hard. Like it's just it's hard for Trump and people like him mentally, but like it's not like it's physically taxing or, you know, whatever. It's just like just say some words. Look at the camera and say some words and people will live. It's like Roman gladiator Colosseum, like the thumbs up, thumbs down. Like you have the ability to just like let people live by not being a dumbass, and people couldn't rise to the challenge. Do you want to go on the Maggie Haberman tangent or?
Yeah. I mean, so my experience of today, to contrast it with yesterday where I like slept fitfully for like 20 minutes at a time when I could to try to make up for my horrible night's sleep, you know, going into the inaugural morning. You know, if Wednesday was like fear, but also baked goods, because we ordered these special cupcakes, and then eventually we started drinking champagne, and our bubble friend, Carter, baked this awesome blueberry cake.
So good.
And, you know, and I got a special delivery, enormous number of flowers from a friend, that are pink and green, Kamala Harris's sorority colors.
Yeah, literally like 100. Your friend sent you 100 flowers to celebrate the occasion. Yeah.
She is black, and I asked her, was she an AKA, you know, Kamala Harris is a sorority at Howard. And if you are not familiar with this, you know, there's 4 historically black sororities and 4 historically black fraternities, and they're very sort of fascinating institutions in terms of like the networks they've built over time. And anyway, so I asked her if she was AKA, and she said no, but her mother was and her grandmother was. And I just had chills because like that goes back almost to the founding of these institutions. And for one of those groups to have produced the first woman to make it into the White House. I mean, I just, like, history is so painful in so many ways in America, and yet there can be extraordinary individual stories. And, you know, sometimes I think those extraordinary individual stories, like a Barack Obama or Kamala Harris, can, like, distract us from, like, the overall structural inequities and make us think it's more okay than it's not. And yet I also still want to like celebrate the amazing trajectory that we get to see. So anyway, that was a bit of a tangent. But if yesterday was cupcakes and champagne and, you know, 100 flowers showing up and, you know, a really delightful, delightful group text that I'm on, different, you know, groups of women that I'm friends with, I was exhausted by like 8:30. And a bunch of people I, you know, am friends with were also like, I got to go to bed.
8:30 a.m. or p.m.? What do you
p.m.
Just, the night of the inauguration?
Yes.
Yes, yep.
Because, you know, again, we're on the Pacific Coast, so the concert had wrapped up, and that was a fun thing to do. Kind of really felt like a pleasant way to celebrate in the evening to have that concert. And then I could not go to sleep for 4 more hours. I was like teeth brushed in bed. This is it. I can finally relax. And I just could not stop myself from kind of like doom scrolling, even though I wasn't really, there wasn't like a doom I was awaiting, but I just found it really hard to break that habit. So what was I doing? I was reading. I realized when the reason for this behavior was gone, but I was still doing it. you know, like what it was that was like the, yes, the impulse.
Yeah.
Side note, like in my youth, I was really incredibly overweight. So like a thing I would find myself doing frequently is just walking over to the refrigerator and opening it, even if I had just eaten a meal. And so like that was me last night. And here's what I was doing. I was checking out Parler takes, which is like screen caps of like what people are posting on Parler. But since Parler has gone down, now it's like Gab and, you know, the other alternatives. But I wanted to know, like, what's going on with the QAnon people since they had their popcorn out and were literally waiting for the bloodbath to start. And I was reading Maggie Haberman. And the reason Maggie Haberman has a job. Her job is to be the White House correspondent for the New York Times. Therefore, her job is to be on the phone, you know, getting the information from the inside sources, often anonymous, validating it with others, writing it for the newspaper and the website. And yet, she somehow also found time to constantly be retweeting every single nugget of information about the White House that didn't even come out of the New York Times newsroom. So whether it was CNN, The Washington Post, Politico, Axios, whoever reported it, if it advanced the story by 0.1 inch, Maggie Haberman would retweet it. And so all I had to do really, like if you look in my Twitter search history, like Maggie Haberman is always first for like the last several months, because like you said, I wanted to know not just what this like person was screaming via Twitter, but also what's the backstory. And because the Trump White House is incredibly leaky, you got the sense there were like five people left standing at the end and they were all still leaking to Maggie Haberman. I just could not stop asking myself, like, what's going on? What's going on? And this guy and his whims and his rants and raves have just taken up so much of my brain space that I, like, could not stop myself, even though it was a negative addiction in every way. Like, it never hit any of my pleasure centers. And maybe there's like some study or some term for this. I would love to know because I'd love to go into rehab, basically. My question is like, what does Maggie Haberman do today? Does she start like a 1-year vacation? Because I feel like she has worked around the clock.
Yeah. I think she's published like a story a day is what they said in this interview. I'll link to it in the show notes, but she kind of explains what the last 4 years have been like.
And some people do not. Some people think of her as a bit of an enabler because of all the anonymous sourcing.
Yeah,
which is a whole, you know, controversy we could go down. But for whatever it's worth, you know, my brain is linked to Maggie Haberman's brain. And I just want to know what she's up to. Maybe she's like eating Korean fried chicken, wearing a caftan, watching Golden Girls reruns, living a great life. She's probably not. She's got kids and she's probably raising her kids.
My feelings are mixed on her because on the one hand, yes, she did. Probably no other reporter was more impactful when it came to reporting in the Trump White House, but also like, you know, it's like it's like a stream of like high PSI shit coming out of this former administration. And she's
what is
like,
PSI?
Pounds per square inch.
Oh.
And just like she's like putting a tube up to it and like pointing it at the audience indiscriminately. You know, like, yes, like there are some times when that's actually valuable. You need to like diagnose the shit and like look at what's inside of it. But like a lot of times you just get shit on you. And it's like and shit that, by the way, might help to erode our democracy and trust in institutions. So I have a mixed feelings about her, but the stuff that was impactful and was like, she's clearly a very hard worker and very talented. So like that is beyond dispute. But you're talking about feelings today. And, you know, the best analogy that I heard about how today felt is like Chris Hayes said, it's like the feeling you have when you've just escaped a car accident. Like, what are you feeling? Your heart's pounding, you're sweating. It's not joy you're experiencing. You have like all this adrenaline in you. You barely just made it out of a disaster, but you're alive. And that's how I feel in the sense that, yeah, it's like a bus barely just missed us. And at every step of the way, it felt like our institutions held up, but like just barely. It's like single digit number of people making the right decision over the course of the last few months saved us from this being way worse. Like, you know, example, Trump and the call with that Georgia guy. You know, it's like if the Georgia guy was like, yes, I'll find you those votes, president. You know, yes, sir. Like, I'll get right on it. You know, we could be looking at a much different world today. And there's like not that many people that like, it's not like there's like 500 people Trump had to convince. It's like 8. And if he had convinced 8 people to like go another way or like rule in a certain way in court or whatever, not to say those would have been the correct decisions for them to do. They people stood up and did the right thing, but not that many people stood up and like it didn't take that many people who would have like just turned the other way, and we'd be in a whole different world today. Like yesterday wouldn't have happened. So it does feel like the democracy is extremely fragile to me. And
yeah, I have a really different.
Yeah, please.
I hear what you're saying. Yeah. You know, like there is a little bit of a feeling of disaster averted, but like, well, first of all, after finally falling asleep after midnight, despite my body's desires and my best intentions to actually go to bed early, I slept till like 11, you know, as you mentioned, you know, I did not need to get up early, because of work being very light right now. And that's, you know, intentional. But also, I managed to sleep soundly for the first time in weeks. And that was a great feeling. So I thought I would, you know, end up, I mean, had a lot of sleep until almost noon. I thought I would like bound downstairs and be full of energy and like have all these things I'd get done. And instead, I've sort of wandered around in a haze because I don't even, first of all, I have to find new behaviors to fill the space where the doom scrolling and the freaking out used to go. And I have ideas about what I'd like those behaviors to be. You know, they're healthy behaviors like take a walk, do yoga, eat something that isn't a cupcake. And, you know, I think I'll get there probably. But what I found was just like, whereas I had so many intense emotions before at the same time fighting for space, I now have like more space to possibly have an emotion at a time. And I am sort of easily distracted all day, which I think is sort of like a hangover almost from having to switch between anger, horror, fear, you know, like this just constant, you know, rapid carousel, you know, that I've been spinning on for certainly for several years, but especially the past year with the pandemic added to it. So I can't say that I feel happy at all. And my analogy is probably a lot darker than Chris Hayes's analogy, which is like, it's like you were kidnapped and you thought he was going to cut off your leg. But you know, he didn't cut off your leg. He was, however, beating the crap out of you the whole time. And now you've been released. But in fact, also the whole country has been beating the crap out. I don't know. You know,
it's not barely an analogy.
Okay. All right.
It's awful.
Well, it is awful because
Joy of Napping is usually really good at the metaphors. So that's like,
You don't think it's a good metaphor?
No, it's awful.
Because it's too negative or because you think it's inaccurate?
Because literally what you just said is completely incoherent and barely a thought.
Okay, well, that's really, really harsh. I just said I'm not at my best. Here's what I'll say. I'm not going to retry the metaphor because clearly I'm not going to come up with a better one. However,
yep.
One of the things I found myself doing today was like listening to different songs on Spotify, like trying to like discover through whatever songs resonated with me what mood I'm in. And the thing I listened to the most of was Rage Against the Machine. Like, I'm thrilled he's gone. I probably have, like everyone else, a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder stuff from like long-term exposure to whatever it is that he put us through, and just that feeling of holding my breath for so long. And some of those who work forces are still the same that burn crosses, and none of that has improved one bit by him leaving. And in fact, it's probably slightly worse because of what happened on January 6th. And so I'm like, none of this feels like I should go back to quote unquote normal, or to the extent that I am going back to normal. Normal ain't good. And I don't feel terrible. I don't feel sad. I do feel mixed in, you know, feelings of mild hope and positivity, and I guess some relief. But mostly, I don't feel like I'm in charge of my own thoughts and emotions, because they were basically reactive for 4 years. Reactive to him, President Trump, but also reactive to, you know, these videos that we saw of people getting killed by the police, or reactive to, you know, the impacts of certain policies like the family separation policy at the border, or reactive to these terrible, terrible, terrible disasters like, you know, the wildfires on the West Coast or hurricanes in the Gulf. And so I literally don't know what to do if I'm not being bombarded by stimuli. And I think it's going to take some time to like figure out what even to do with myself.
Well, wishing you the best of luck with that.
Is that not how you feel?
No, it's not how I feel.
Wow.
I feel, I mean, I think
most of the things I listed, many of the things will still be a problem.
This is interesting. I recorded a Patreon exclusive with Joanna Robinson, and she said something very similar, which is she said like she felt like so much of her energy was arrayed like against this one individual, that like now that he's basically been vanquished, like Thanos snapped out of existence from our national consciousness, at least for today. It's like, what do you do with that energy?
Yeah, literally, even for a day. Like, maybe he'll mount an insurrection to try to take the Capitol again tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I had today where I didn't really need to think about him. And it's not to say I don't know who I am, you know, but nor do I want to. Like, there's a common argument that like, well, yes, Trump is very bad, but he just reflects forces that were already in America, and, you know, were part of our society anyway, and maybe we didn't experience them in quite this way, but it would be naive to think like the problem goes away with Trump. And yeah, I completely agree with that. And he was a very triggering figure for me, because he would not only abuse people sexually and physically, like emotionally, like scream at people and, you know, rant and evade responsibility and all that other stuff. He would brag about it. And it just reminded me so much of every time I've ever felt that there was an injustice, and that I felt powerless, and that I felt personally attacked, and that I felt unsafe, and that if something were to happen, no one would give a shit if I tried to do something about it. You know, those are awful feelings. And so there is something specific about him being gone that is meaningful. So I think I, on some level, did not dare to hope that we would have such a peaceful, quote unquote peaceful, you know, at the cost of 20,000 plus, you know, folks having to sleep in hallways and on floors in the nation's capital. I didn't let myself think about what Thursday, January 21st would even feel like, because I just wanted to get through January 20th. And so there is a little bit of a hollowness, I think a good hollowness. That's a positive vacuum.
I think for me, it's a combination. It's some mix of either. I'm of two minds. Either number one, I've gotten pretty good at controlling, you know, how the media I consume impacts me when it comes to like political news. Or to quote Mark Ruffalo, I'm always angry, and you know.
Oh, I'm definitely always angry.
Yeah, stay angry, folks. We hope
in a good way. I think it's healthy.
We hope you are staying angry, staying safe, staying healthy, and that today you are feeling some level of hope and peace, given all that's happened. There is plenty to do. There is plenty of fight left to have. There are plenty of bad things and horrors in the future, but this week, going to try to feel a little bit good about things before we get back into the trenches. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Culturally Relevant. You can find more episodes at culturallyrelevantshow.com. Email us at culturallyrelevantshow@gmail.com. Follow this podcast on Twitter at CRevShow. If you enjoyed this podcast, would really appreciate you leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. It really does help. I want to thank our executive producers over at the Patreon at patreon.com/DaveChen, specifically Sid Yadav, Steve Austin, Dan Flanagan, Jeff Evans, and Mark Warner. Thanks so much for your contributions. Thanks to all of my patrons over at patreon.com/DaveChen. You make podcasts like this possible.
So does that mean a thank you to me? Because I am one of your patrons.
It's true in many ways. And a huge thanks also to Simplecast for powering this podcast at simplecast.com, a great podcast management and analytics solution. Check them out at simplecast.com. Next week, I think we're going to go back to having a normal episode. I think it's going to be like an interview episode. It's going to be someone really cool. The interview's already been recorded. Thanks for listening. We'll see you later.